Disclaimer: The Good Divorce Podcast is unscripted, authentic conversations with genuine people. Real life is hard sometimes, and that means sometimes these stories may contain content not suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to another listener-supported episode of The Good Divorce Podcast. I'm Tom Kendrick. Thank you for joining me, especially listeners in Houston, Texas, Seattle, Washington, Phoenix, Arizona, and Maple Ridge, Canada. Tonight, I am grateful to hear Sarah Armstrong's story and learn about her intention to have a divorce that was not how she saw others, setting the intention to put kids first, how she used her own experience to become an author, and here's some advice for handling the co-parenting relationship. Sarah's book is titled The Mom's Guide to a Good Divorce: What to Think Through When Children Are Involved. And now let's take off into the interview with Sarah Armstrong. Before I take off into the interview, I'd like to take a moment to make space for anyone who is currently within the process of divorce or just getting started. If you're listening, know that you are not alone. Whatever you might be feeling now is true and valid. You will get through this. It is difficult, and you can do it. Tonight, I'm excited to have Sarah Armstrong on the podcast. And I'm sure you're wondering, like I am, who is Sarah Armstrong? So Sarah, would you tell us a little bit about your background and who you are?
Great. So Tom, great to be with you. I'm actually from Michigan originally. I grew up there. I went off to Georgetown University and played volleyball on scholarship back in the days when I could run and jump and do those things, long time ago. Started my career in marketing at Leo Burnett, which is an agency in Chicago. Then moved to Atlanta with my fiance, then my husband at the time, and joined the Coca-Cola company, and was involved in global marketing there, and specifically led the worldwide agency operations for a number of years. Then left there to go to McKinsey as a partner and focus on agency operations and marketing operations. And then just about 18 months ago, I joined Google as their vice president of global marketing operations. So I've had a long career in marketing. Along the way, I had a daughter named Grace, and she is now actually 18 years old and just heading off to college. I actually wrote a book that I wrote about 5 years after my divorce, which we'll talk about in a moment. And so I am an author, although that was actually never something I had on my list of things to do in my life. But it's interesting how life unfolds. And I think the only other thing to note is I love to travel. I've traveled the world. I've seen 46 of the 50 states and 55 countries, and I have a wanderlust for travel. So it's something that I enjoy doing. Any time I can be on a plane going somewhere, I'm very happy. So,
all right, good to hear. Well, I always start off with the same opening questions to get it going. What is your divorce story? And then how do you define what good means for your situation?
Right. So my divorce story starts, my daughter Grace, as I mentioned, she was 7 years old when we decided to get divorced. And at that point, my reflections on divorce, from growing up and seeing what I would say fairly ugly divorces, is that I wanted to do it a different way. I thought there had to be a better way to get divorced than to have it be such a negative influence on our lives. And so I talked to my soon-to-be ex-husband about the fact that I wanted to go through this in a very specific way. We chose to go through a collaborative divorce. So that was part of our process, which I'm a big believer in. But I think you can have a good divorce regardless of what type of process you go through. And so, I should actually start by saying, just for the record, I'm actually not an advocate for divorce. I think people should stay married and happily married as long as they can. And hopefully that's for a lifetime. But sometimes that doesn't work out and things don't go as planned. And so, unfortunately, divorce is more common than ever these days. And so when I went through my divorce, I realized that I did want to do it and approach it in a different way. And so Interestingly, we went through it. We went through the process. We went through the collaborative approach. And I can say now, 10 years later, at the end of it, I can coin it and can call it a good divorce. But interestingly enough, it was my daughter that coined the phrase for me. And she was 8 years old, about a year into our divorce. And we were standing in CVS at the checkout line. And there was a People magazine cover, and there was a celebrity couple on the front of the magazine cover. And she said, "Mommy, is that a good divorce or a bad divorce?" And I said, "Grace, I don't know. How would you define a good divorce versus a bad divorce?" She goes, "Well, good divorce is when the mommy and daddy are nice to each other, like you and daddy, and a bad divorce is when they scream and yell at each other." And I walked it out of that CVS that day, Tom, and I thought, you know what, whatever we're doing something right, that Grace, a year into our divorce, could coin our divorce a good divorce. So that's really kind of my definition is based on Grace's definition for me. But it really comes down to the fact that, you know, a good divorce means that couples that go through a divorce, you know, put their personal feelings for one another aside, and they really focus on what's best for their children. And so that's really my kind of definition of a good divorce.
I appreciate those answers. I especially like how you described that you're not necessarily an advocate. And myself personally, I would tend to agree with that. And I imagine there are plenty of other people who initially are, but you're also correct that sometimes it just might not work out for whatever reason. And so having a way to step through it then in a good manner that we're discussing now is a good thing to have and be putting out there in the world. So I'm glad you're putting it out there with me.
Yeah. And to that end, Tom, I mean, no one gets married to get divorced.
Right. That's true.
And, you know, no one also gets divorced, unfortunately, for probably positive reasons or reasons that you'd say, gosh, this is something I want to do. But I really think when children are involved, you know, they don't get to make the decision that their parents are getting divorced. You know, that is not something they would probably choose to have happen. But their lives are the most significantly impacted by this decision. And so I think as parents, when we bring children into this world, we bring them in with a commitment to keep them safe and healthy and happy. You know, I say that, you know, we put bike helmets on them and we fill, you know, we make sure we cover the plugs and we feed them organic milk. We do all these things, you know, to keep them safe. And, but then when we go through a divorce, if we're not careful, we could put them in a very toxic environment. And in some instances in divorces that I've been witness to, it can be for a long time that those kids are in that toxic environment. And I just don't think that it needs to be that way. And so I think as parents, we have to be very conscious as we enter into this process, the impact it's having on our children, and take a very specific approach so that they don't sit in that toxic environment and they can actually be healthy and happy on the other side of it.
Sure thing. Yeah, you kind of mentioned the creating toxic environments for your kids. How did you explain what was happening to your daughter as it was happening?
Yeah.
Or was she of age that you needed to?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. She was 7. She was aware. We sat down with her and we explained together that we were going to get a divorce. And in fairness, we actually talked to a child specialist prior to telling Grace, and we got some counseling from this therapist in terms of how to approach it. And, you know, he said, depending on the child's age, and Grace was 7, that some children will take in the news. And then, you know, we told Grace, and then she said, "Can I go upstairs and play now?" You know, it wasn't, you know, but other kids at different ages are going to have more questions. So it depends on the age in terms of what they're going to take in. And when those questions will come over the course of time, it's just a matter of when and at what stage and what age you're telling them the news.
Okay, that's good. Yeah. It's definitely good advice to, if people can engage a professional like that. Just from my own situation, we were concerned about using the D word in the house. So we haven't actually said it. However, we made the transition for our kids just a natural occurrence that mom's moving over here and we're going to start splitting time, and you're going to have your space in both places. And so, like you said, at certain points, I imagine we'll get some more questions about why are we in two different houses and stuff like that. So we'll cross those bridges soon, I imagine. But
Well, it's interesting too, Tom. One of the things that the specialist said to us that first session we had with him is he looked at me and he said, "Sarah, do you travel?" And I said, "Yeah, I travel actually globally for my job." And he looked at my ex-husband and he said, "Do you travel?" And he said, "Yes, I travel domestically." He said, "Well, Grace is about to become a professional traveler. She's going to travel every week for the next 11 years until she heads off to college." And Tom, I burst into tears right then, because that is actually not what I wanted for her life. And so I vowed to myself and I said to my ex-husband, "I want to do everything I can to minimize the impact of what I deem or what I call a professional traveler," as the specialist referred to her. And so we did what we could. And again, there's a lot of logistics of life when you get divorced and you have children living across two homes, but we really worked hard to make sure that Grace did not feel the impact of living across two homes beyond her going to sleep in two different homes. So we tried to minimize her, what I said, setting the goal of never packing a bag, like really trying to minimize her feeling like she had to pack a bag every week, because that even just that physical, you know, act is a lot for little kids and young children and even up until their teen years to have to do that. So we really tried to, where, you know, socioeconomic considerations is part of this, but where we could have duplicate socks and duplicate jeans or whatever, so that they, so that Grace wasn't having to do that. Packing of the bag was a really important piece of how we approached it and trying to minimize the impact of that.
Right. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that phrase is in the book because I recall it. And that hit me pretty strongly too, the term professional traveler for your kid. And so, and it's a strong term. I mean, it definitely evoked in you the right kind of idea to, you know, make sure that you did what you could to make that as minimized as possible.
So, and again, there's always those things in fairness that aren't, you're not going to be able to duplicate and have in two houses. And there'll be those moments. I say there's a lot of test and patience that comes along the way on the journey of living in a divorced scenario, both for the parents and the children. And there'd be a morning where Grace would come down and say, "I don't have my dress shoes for dress up day at school because they're at dad's." And I'd have to stop and pause and think, you know what, it's not her fault that her dress shoes are her dad's. And so I would take a deep breath and say, "Let's go get the dress shoes at dad's." And so, you know, those are just those moments where you just have to remind yourself that when those logistics in life present themselves that aren't ideal and aren't what you probably would choose to happen in the moment, your children aren't the ones that created that situation. And so showing them any frustration at that point is not fair to them. And so I really took the deep breath, nodded, and, you know, we walked out the door to go get the dress shoes. So.
Oh yeah, definitely. Definitely understand that. I've had those situations too. And I mean, you're exactly right. You do the in-head, exactly. You do the in-head yelling, you take the breath and you go, "Okay, well, I'll go get it." And we're good. So
exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly it.
So you've kind of spoken a little bit about having your own amicable divorce. Do you have some new insights from your own experience for dealing with the ex former spouse when it comes to an amicable divorce?
Yeah. I mean, I think that we made very conscious choices throughout both our divorce process and the decisions that we made together. And one of the key things, and it does come through the collaborative process, but in a more traditional divorce process, you can do this too. But I think the fundamental thing that we continued to use as a point of reference was our parenting plan and what we had agreed within that parenting plan. And it, again, with Grace being only age 7, we had 11 years of things to think through. So all the way up to, you know, were we going to buy her a car when she turned 16? How would we fund her college? You know, what would we do with education throughout time? What would we do for extracurriculars? All the decisions you have to make around your children. And it sounds like a lot to do up front, but I do think having a clearly outlined parenting plan and some of those decisions made well in advance of, you know, other individuals coming into each of our lives. And even in fairness, you know, things that you might think are the minutiae of life, but if you write them down, you get them landed, then they're done and you don't have to debate them and they're decided. And so I do think that helped us along the way, because some things that might be discussions or debate later on down the road as you're co-parenting were kind of addressed and already discussed and landed. So that was a key part. I think another piece is just how you approach communication with your ex-spouse and vice versa. We try to be very respectful of when, you know, for example, we can connect with each other, I'd try to have a kind of a list of things that I wanted to run through. I wasn't pinging and calling all the time. I didn't feel that was good use of either of our time. So I tried to collect those points and say, let's have a quick call for 10, 15 minutes and run through these points. So again, different tools from a communication standpoint, whether it's text, email, whatever works for you. We had a family calendar where all of Grace's things were in full visibility for both of us. So there weren't any debates of where she was going to be either on a given weekend or for a given, you know, soccer game or, you know, golf match or rowing she rode. So her crew. So it allowed us to have a very clear kind of approach to communication, which can be the thing that really can get under people's skin in terms of during a divorce, the either lack of communication or inconsistent communication or not clear communication. So that was a thing that I think helped us over the years. And we tried to really work hard at.
All right. That's good advice for sure. There's definitely many choices for apps and ways to go about it. I do really appreciate that you're mentioning the family calendar. In my case, we both have just a whiteboard calendar at both of our homes. And mm-hmm. So we can write their stuff and some of our own, but we make sure to include that they can see where they're going to be.
Yes.
Each week. So to help them understand.
Yeah. I think it's really important for kids, especially in this situation that they'll be in for quite some time, that, you know, they can see where they're going to be. And over the course of time, if you stay consistent enough, it does, like I always say, it does become the new normal for them. And it doesn't even become, I think, part of it, just kind of how they live. And especially when children are at a younger age and go through this change, you know, they do adjust. Children do adjust to what we, you know, can present to them in their lives. But I think the more positive environment we create in both houses and the positive approach we take to those transitions and all the logistics that come with it, the better off they are in terms of just adjusting to what is a different way of living than most kids have to do.
For sure. Yeah. And I like that you mentioned how kids can begin to adjust. My former spouse would attest her parents also did divorce and it was young. So for her. And so when she's got to be about age 10 or so, I don't recall what she said, but at some point in time, she started to realize that most of her other friends didn't live in two houses. And so for her, that was the norm. And so it's interesting that you mentioned that too.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I do think it. I mean, again, I didn't grow up in a divorced household. My parents have been married over 50 years happily. And I kind of always thought that would be the case for me too. And so when I watched the other divorces that I grew up watching and I saw the impact of the back and forth and the different dynamics that came with that and some of the different undertones that came with things, I just really thought, gosh, there has to be a way we can do this where that isn't what Grace talks about years from now when she talks about her childhood. The first thing out of her mouth shouldn't be, well, my parents were divorced. You know, hopefully it's lots of other happy memories. And that's just hopefully a side note.
Right. Those are some good thoughts there. Let's see, you mentioned that you used the collaborative legal process, as did we. So I was curious, how did you end up learning about that and finding it? And then what did you, I guess, just kind of go into your experience of it?
Okay, no, it's a great question. You know, the collaborative divorce process when we went through our divorce was fairly new in our area, but I had someone recommend me looking into it when we were starting to talk about the fact that we were considering getting a divorce. So in our instance, we each had a coach so that coached us through the process. Then we had our lawyers, we had a financial neutral, and then we had the child specialist. And so they do work as a team. And what I would say, you know, that's, some people will say, gosh, that sounds like that might become a very expensive process. And actually, I think it's a very efficient process if used well. And we found that you spend more time ideally with your coaches, working through all the decisions, as I mentioned, around the parenting plan, those things that legally you can think through with a coach. And then you go to the lawyers really to basically summarize it, write it up and make sure it can pass muster in the courts. And so we found the whole process to really work for the approach we were looking to take. And I really think that if you can consider it and you have resources within your area to consider the approach, it's definitely one worth exploring. But I also don't believe you have to go through a collaborative divorce process to have a good divorce. I think you can go through a traditional divorce process. I think you can go through mediation, you know, strict mediation, different processes. But I think at the end of the day, it's your mindset. And I think mindset is essential. in this whole process of really going into it with a belief that if you can go through it with the positive intent of coming out of it on the other end, with a focus on your children, with a focus on being happy, which I know when you're going through divorce seems like a very foreign concept because there's so many emotions involved. But I do believe that you can come out of it on the other end, happy, and your children can be happy, and you can live a great life and not have this negative cloud of the fact that you're divorced. You know, I do think divorce can become a bit of a scarlet letter in our society. And I like to say that, you know, getting divorced is a process. You know, it is not actually something that needs to be the label that you have to wear every day. But again, that takes some conscious effort to not allow it to define your life and your children's lives in that way.
Right. And I really like how you described it as a process and not a label. That is something that I've chatted with my previous guest kind of about, that it's unfortunate that there's not some other word to use to call it, because it, to me anyway, it seems that divorce really is the legal part, and then there's everything else.
Absolutely. That's why even in my book, I break it into the phases of change. And I talk about preparing for the change, during the change, and post the change. So I actually consciously, to your point, did not want to use the word divorce and, you know, every other word of the book, because I felt like you're reminded enough that you're going through this. And it is, it's a change in life. It's a big, major life change. But yes, the divorce itself is a legal process. There's a lot of logistics of life that you need to manage, you know, through that and then after that, that come with it. But I still find it interesting when you go to a doctor's office and they ask you your status and you have to check that you're divorced. Why does it matter? I mean, you're either single or married as far as I can tell, but I check divorced and I just smirk and say, okay, I guess you need to know that. So,
right. Can you explain maybe what experiences in your life gave you the ability to see past the negative perception of divorce?
Yeah, well, as I mentioned earlier, you know, I think I saw enough negativity in divorce growing up from family, friends, and things that I did have a perception of divorce being negative. But I also had such a belief that there had to be a different way and another way. And it was interesting. Once I'd gotten divorced, I had a number of my friends that would come to me and say, can you help me through thinking through this? I'm, you know, considering divorce. And again, I always told them I'd rather have you stay married, but if you're at that point, then let's talk about it. And so I helped a number of girlfriends through their processes. And at the end, they would say to me, you really need to write this stuff down. And I'd say, what are you talking about? They're like, all this guidance you have, it's really helpful. And you're so positive about the fact that you can be happy after going through this, I think it would really help other women, other moms. And so interestingly enough, I was in Mexico City at a business dinner with a group of Latin men. And one of my friends turned to me and he said, Sarah, he goes, you're so happy. And I said, yeah. And he goes, but you're divorced. And I said, well, Salman, being divorced is not a death sentence. My ex-husband and I decided to no longer be married to each other. And I mentioned that I had some friends that had been encouraging me to write a book on this topic. And he said, well, you really should. And I said, well, I don't consider myself an author. I don't consider myself a writer. And he said, well, you really should think about it. So I got on the plane the next day and I opened up my laptop. And the first line I wrote was, this book is written by a girl who never ever thought she would get a divorce, who got a divorce and what she learned along the way. And that literally was the first, and it's still the first line of the first page of my book. And so I think with the experience of helping my friends and with the encouragement of those that found the experience I had gone through as a positive view of going through this and potentially coming out on the other end happy, I think I've just felt that there is a different way, and I really want to help society. I mean, to think and perceive a different view of divorce than what we currently have, which is so negative and comes with so much baggage. I just don't think there's enough good conversation, which I really appreciate what you're doing, Tom, with your podcast, because I don't think there's enough good conversation on the topic of a good divorce, you know, and the fact that it's feasible. And so I think if we can change that societal perception that a good divorce is an attainable outcome, it could help a lot of families that are going through this process.
Absolutely. That's a big reason for my starting this. I can acknowledge now that while in the thick of it, I probably didn't have quite the mental capacity to be, you know, using the right search terms to get to something like this now. But then hopefully as you and I and others push this terminology, whatever, forward, that maybe that will be easier for others. Because I did reach a certain point where I had gained some positives from the things that I reached out to, and I knew I needed to give back to that. So,
yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. I can appreciate, yeah, in the moment and in the time that you're going through a divorce, sometimes it's hard to look for those things, to look for things that can help you get on a path that may have a bit more of a positive outlook. But I would strongly encourage those that may be listening that are in the midst or considering that, if you can infuse a little bit of that thinking into how you're approaching it, and especially when children are involved, it will absolutely be worth it in the long run. I fundamentally believe that. And I have seen it be the case for those that have, you know, made that it takes extra effort. You know, it's almost easier to be negative and stay in that space than to actually say, okay, I'm going to change my mindset and I'm going to look at this in a different way to try to change the outcome of what I'm going through.
Oh, yes. It absolutely takes some extra effort to be positive, for sure.
It does. It really does.
Kind of switch gears a little bit towards, we're recording here in October, so we've got holidays coming up here soon before we know it. So there's possibly parents out there who might not have done holidays yet as a divorced and co-parenting couple or people. What should those people be aware of?
Well, I think it depends on the holiday, some of the things to think about, but I'd say if you start with Halloween and go through the different holiday, you know, I think we had traditions with Halloween that we wanted to continue, even though we were in a divorced household. And so my ex-husband would still come to our house and take Grace trick-or-treating, and I'd pass out the candy because we had done that, you know, for the first 7 years of our life. And we decided not to change that tradition, even though we were divorced. As you get into more of the Thanksgiving and Christmas or Hanukkah or Kwanzaa or the various holidays, you know, it's a matter of really thinking about how you want to handle splitting that time with your children. And, you know, it is, I will admit, even, you know, 11 years post-divorce, holidays that I didn't have Grace were hard. You know, those are hard days or hard holidays. And so I tried to make alternative plans. So I didn't spend what I would call a traditional Christmas when I didn't have her, because I thought, you know, sitting around the Christmas tree, watching my nieces and nephews open presents and not having Grace there was not really how I would choose to spend time. So I think you have to decide what works for you. The one thing I will say, just in terms of the gift giving aspect in the holidays, is this is where sometimes you do, especially depending on the age of the children, you probably do need to take the high road and decide whether you help your children think about a gift for your ex-spouse, whether you have a family friend do that, whether you have a family member. But helping your children to get to the point where they can give gifts to their parents in a way that they're excited about that, and it doesn't feel like an awkward situation for them. Because again, the holidays, I mean, we are defining how our children will feel about the holidays for the long term as they're going through this divorce. And so I think it was really important to think about that. So I always just, you know, for example, I'd wrap up pieces of art that Grace had done and give them to my ex-husband from her, or whatever the case is. So you can get really creative. It doesn't necessarily need to cost a lot of money, but you can be thoughtful in a way where the children are excited about what they're giving as gifts. And it's not from you, it's from them. But I do think it's a really important thing to think through. And again, it takes potentially some forethought and planning to do it where it's not a stressful situation for you as well as you're trying to scramble to figure out what that gift may be. But it's really important for your children to be able to do that.
All right. Yeah. I think those are all good bits for people to think, to get started with thinking, particularly the gift giving ideas. That might be something that you don't really think of right away until it's 2 days before or whatever. And
late in the game. And then there's a scurry going on. Yeah. So figuring out what to get mom or dad. So yeah. Yes.
Good things to keep in the front of your mind here. So I guess to go along with kind of the continuing the holidays a little bit more, what do you have any advice about those who might be attempting to still gather together as a family?
Yeah, no, actually, I do. We had traditions, whether it was holidays or birth, actually, it's more around birthdays and even Grace's graduation, where we did celebrate those together. And I always say, even though we weren't in the same house, we were still a family when it came to Grace and being able to celebrate those special moments with her. My ex-husband would come over when we'd have a birthday party, and he'd be her blowing out the candles with her. We just celebrated her high school graduation, and we were all together for that. In fact, my ex-husband and I just moved her into college together. We took her out to school, and mom and dad were there to move her into her dorm room. So I think that those moments in life, those milestones in life, whether they're holidays, birthdays, graduations, special moments. I think, at the end of the day, you two as a couple did have this child or these children. And it really is important to remember that those moments are about them, they're not about you. And so, whatever emotions you have about each other, whatever thoughts that you have, if you can set those aside and be in that moment with your child, they get to celebrate that moment the way they're supposed to, which is with both of their parents with them. And so, I think that's really an important thing. And I have a story, Tom, that we went to Grace's parent-teacher conference in sixth grade. And at that stage at her school, the children sit in the parent-teacher conference with the parents. So we sat down, my ex-husband and Grace and I, and we're talking to her advisor. And almost at the end of the conference, she turns and looks at us and she goes, "Are you two divorced?" And I said, "Yeah." She said, "I had no idea." And I said, "Well, it didn't occur to me to tell you." It was one of those moments I thought. And she said, "Well, it's amazing. I cannot tell you how few couples can come in that are divorced and actually sit here through a parent-teacher conference and talk about their child." And she says, "It makes me very sad." And I said, and she goes, "Because the one thing a couple should be able to do is come in and talk about how their child is doing in school and set aside all the things that might be going on in their lives and focus on their child." And she said, "And it's amazing how few couples can do that." And I said to her, I go, "That makes me very sad." And again, Grace is hearing this conversation, by the way, in sixth grade. But I said, "That makes me very sad as well, because there's nothing more important than her dad and I hearing how she's doing in school. And we should both hear it, and we're both here to do that together." And it was just a moment of reflection of, again, how so many couples aren't able to set those emotions aside, even when their children are the focus. So whether it's holidays and even down to the parent-teacher conference, I think it's really important to think about how you're showing up per se.
Yeah, the kids first idea, I think, is a big key, if they're involved. For my experience, that was initially mentioned, that we both kind of acknowledge that we have been and still are a good parenting team, and we want to keep that. And so for me especially, that set the stage for walking into a good divorce. So
Absolutely. And I think co-parenting together, if you can make the commitment at the beginning of your divorce that co-parenting is a priority and that you want to do that well, that is a huge step in the right direction in terms of going down the path of a good divorce. I really
terrific.
think that's a fundamental aspect of being able to say years later, we did okay. My ex-husband and I actually went out to dinner after dropping Grace off at college, and we said, "You know what? We did it. We got her here." And that was a, it was 11 years in the making, but we feel good about how we raised her together.
That's a great milestone. That's awesome.
Yeah, it really was.
Do you have any advice for people who are beginning to think about or attempt to integrate new significant others and the children?
I think this is a very personal decision in terms of what makes sense for where you are in your divorce process. Are you newly divorced? Has it been a while? Because I think introducing potential significant others too early on in the process can be confusing to children, again, depending on the age. But I think that if you can be thoughtful about that and, really think about what's best for your children and keep that in mind all along the path, then you're going to make the right decision based on what's best for your children. Sometimes, again, that can be hard because it may not be what you want to choose for your own personal life. But I think it really is important to think about what they're going to remember, what they're going to take away from those interactions, and whether it's the right time for them to have those interactions. And then, you know, kind of let that guide you in terms of the decisions you make of when to integrate those individuals into your children's lives.
Definitely lots of personal stuff tied up within that. And so there would certainly be a lot to consider for any group of co-parents and others to be working through it together. I think you're right that, again, going back to the children first thought, that however it works best for them is probably the best.
Yeah. If you can let that guide your decisions along the way, and each step, you know, in each step of the process, it's almost like look at it from their view. You know, put yourself in your children's little mini shoes and think about how they're seeing the situation and let that guide you. I think it can definitely help. You know, one of the other, aside from integrating, you know, people in their lives, is what you're doing to their environment during the divorce. And one of the topics I talk about in my book is the concept of minimizing the gaps. And the physical representation of potentially things being pulled apart, and trying to minimize what those memories could do to your children. And I tell the story that we have a long hallway of black and white family photos that was a combination and a compilation of my ex-husband's family and my family, and we had put that together over the years. And when we were going through the divorce, I decided that I would make it my project to get different photos of my family and Grace and things, and, you know, switch them out on the wall. And so there was a Saturday where Grace went down the street for a play date, and I took the effort of, I had everything framed, and she walked out the door and said, okay, I'm going to do it right now. So I went and took the photos of my ex-husband, his family, and put them in a box to give to him, and put other photos up. And so Grace came home about an hour later, and I'm in the kitchen, and I hear this voice from the hallway that says, "Hey, Mom." And I said, "What's that, Grace?" She said, "The wall has changed." And I stopped dead in my tracks, Tom. Stopped, and I thought, oh my gosh. I said, "Well, what's changed?" She said, "There's more pictures of me up there. It looks great." And she ran upstairs. Now, I can tell you that if I had not gone to the effort, and it is effort, to have framed different pictures and put them up there, and I'd just taken my ex-husband's family pictures and the pictures of him off the wall and left those little hangers on the wall, years later, Grace would go to therapy, and I'm not saying that jokingly, probably for sure, and talk about that during my parents' divorce, my mom took all the pictures of my dad and his family off the wall and left those little hangers. And so it was, for me, just an example of the physical representation of trying to make sure that things don't feel like they're getting pulled apart. And so again, this can take some effort, and it may not be that you can replace every item that's leaving if you're changing households, but the ones that are really going to stick in your child's memory, just really give some thought to what you can do to fill that gap. You know, it doesn't have to be the exact same thing, but at least it helps so that those memories aren't the ones that stick.
Absolutely. It's amazing what the kids will notice, and then what they might not notice. So
right. Absolutely. Yeah. And the things she runs by that wall of pictures 20 times a day. I would never thought it's like wallpaper. So I never thought it would be something that would register for her, and it registered within seconds, and it literally stopped me in my tracks. So it just was an interesting moment of reflection of how important their environment is to them, especially during these times when there's a lot of change going on.
Yeah, for sure. What sort of resources did you find and use to help yourself as you were kind of just stepping through the process?
That's a great question. So in fairness, I was given a lot of books, but actually I'd opened them and they were fairly dense and thick, and I did not read them because they were too dense and thick. And as you know, when you go through divorce, there's so many things going through your mind and so many things you're trying to process. Which is why we can talk a little bit later about how I designed my book, because it was really very conscious. But I'd say what I think my biggest resource was finding the collaborative divorce process and following that process and being led through that process with the coaches and those involved. And I think that was the best thing I could have done for myself and for my ex-husband as we were thinking through this approach. But the good news is, since my divorce, I think there are more resources out there, podcasts like yours. I have, there's a woman I work with named Pilar Prince, who has Divorce in Good Company, which is in a similar vein in terms of really wanting to focus on how can we go through this well. She's actually an ex-divorce attorney and has a lot of experience in helping couples go through divorce, but then really wanting to show how you can hopefully do it in a healthy and respectful way. And so I do think there is a bit of an ability, if you're looking for resources that can help you do this well, whether it's books, podcasts, various websites, that there are a lot of resources out there. And I hope for those that are looking for a little bit of a positive infusion, my book, The Mom's Guide to a Good Divorce, could be one of those resources. And as I mentioned, it's I wrote it with a divorced mom's mindset and looking back, because I realized that I couldn't take in those thick books that were very dense. And so my book is written in bite-sized pieces. And so it's 185 topics, but there's only a topic per page. And so if you buy the paperback, there's a lot of white space, and I do that on purpose so that you have time, you have a place to write notes or even just reflect. And you may read just a couple topics. You might just read one, and but it's not meant to actually be read cover to cover, because it's set up in the different phases of preparing for divorce, during a divorce, and post-divorce. But it, I do think that having something you can refer to that helps you through the process is something I wish I'd had. And so when I wrote the book, I obviously had myself and my friends in mind in terms of what I'd done. And it's interesting, I'll tell a quick story, Tom, that I was at Whole Foods near my house right after my book was launched, and had a woman stop me in the produce section. And she said to me, "Are you Sarah Armstrong, the author?" And I stopped, and I wasn't used to, I was like, "Oh, yeah, I guess I am." And she said, "Well, I went to your book signing at Barnes & Noble, and I wanted to thank you for writing your book. I'm going through divorce, and I carry it with me because it keeps me calm." And she thanked me for writing it, and she walked away. And Tom, I didn't know this woman, you know, a complete stranger walks up to me in the Whole Foods produce section. And I said, wow, that's why I wrote this book, is to help someone that I don't know that's going through this process. And hopefully, and in her instance, it was keeping her calm. So that's, you know, whatever we can all do, and you're doing the same thing with your podcast, whatever we can do to help people through this process and keep them calm. I really think that's the goal.
Right. Yeah. That's a good goal to have. And yes, I did read your book cover to cover, but
I appreciate that.
I did read it via Kindle, but you do note in there about the white space and the note-taking space, which I thought was a really, really good idea. And then I did also like the organization of it, the bite-sized pieces and the linear timeline of it. I think that will be helpful for anybody to pick up, and wherever they're at, they can quickly get to a point and find that one thing that they might be stuck on at the time. So that's a good design.
Thank you. And that was the goal. If you don't want to read it all, but you need just those couple topics, you need a little, you know, point of reflection on that, they're there. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You're welcome. I think I will close up here. I have three final questions that I like to close up with for everyone. First one being, having just thought through and spoken about your divorce experience, since this is the Good Divorce Podcast, do you feel your divorce was good in your definition?
Yes, I definitely think my divorce was good in the definition that Grace defined actually for me and for us. And, you know, if you can say you're proud of an accomplishment, and I know it sounds funny to say this, but I'm proud of how we went through a divorce, and I'm proud of how we've raised and co-parented Grace together. And I'm proud of where we are now, that we can, you know, send her off to college and look and say, you know what? It wouldn't have been what I think either of us or Grace would have chosen relative to the 11 years, but I think we made the best of it. And I do think we had a good divorce.
I can certainly appreciate the proud comment for sure. In addition to your own book, do you have any other book, author, or another resource that you have found most helpful that you recommend?
So I mentioned Divorce in Good Company, which I would definitely recommend. I think both the content and the advice being given on that platform is very strong. There's also some other podcasts out there similar to yours that I think are in keeping with the spirit of the Good Divorce. There's the Amicable Divorce And there's Moms Moving On. So there's some different podcasts out there that I've found helpful as well. So I do think, again, I love the fact, Tom, that there's yourself and others that are really allowing people to reflect in a podcast form, because I think it's a really wonderful way for people to take in and think through things, in addition to reading a book or going on a website. But those would be some that I'd recommend based on some recent exposure.
Great. Yep. I've written those down, so I'll make sure to locate links for those and put them in the description. And finally, how can listeners stay connected and engaged with you?
Great. Well, I have my website. It's actually www.gooddivorce.guide. So it's a little different. It doesn't have the .com in the end. That's my website. It's where you can learn a bit more about my book. You can reach me through the website. I have my email address there. You can purchase a book through the website, or you can locate it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It's available, as you mentioned, in paperback, Kindle, Nook, ebook. And also, I just went into the studio this last summer, a year ago, actually, and did an Audible version. So it's also an audiobook is available, which I found to be a fascinating process. And so, so all of those are available depending on how people need to access the book.
Great. Very good. I imagine the audiobook part was an interesting process.
It is an interesting process. It's very hard to hear you listen to yourself and then critique it and figure out which pieces you want to fix. So yes, it was, but an amazing learning process. I really enjoyed it. And so it's now available for those that may want to listen versus have it on a device or on your bedside table.
Great. Very good. Well, Sarah, I really appreciate that you're advocating for a good divorce in the same way that I am, or similar way, collecting and sharing each other's stories. And together, I hope we can continue to change the public narrative on divorce. And so thank you for deciding to be a guest here on the Good Divorce Podcast.
Thank you for having me, Tom. It's been great spending time with you. And I really appreciate all the efforts you're doing to help people know that a good divorce is possible.
If you'd like to have more frequently released stories, make sure you share this podcast with others. And contact me if you have a story to share or know someone who does. Please check out the Good Divorce Podcast page on Facebook for additional information, or email your guest suggestions to gooddivorcepodcast@gmail.com. Everyone has a story to tell, and I would love to hear and share yours. Together, we can find and live the good in a tough situation. If you've enjoyed this episode and others, I hope you'll consider a contribution to help support the creation of this podcast. This podcast will remain advertisement-free. You can contribute using PayPal at tkendrick179 or Venmo at tomkendrick. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Good Divorce Podcast. To learn more, please find the Good Divorce Podcast page on Facebook. You can also find other social media posts on Instagram at Good Divorce Podcast, and on Twitter at Divorce Good. I hope you've enjoyed this story. Together, we can find and live the good in a tough situation.